Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Dale Crowley Jr. will hook up with us from Washington, D.C. in approximately 1 hour from now. Until then, there are three or four items that we're going to look at in the news. The first of which involves budget priorities. If you looked at yesterday's New York Times, you discovered a headline that said, Bush's request for wars increases to $196 billion. What does that have to do with the fires going on in San Diego right now and the difficulty that the authorities are having containing those fires? Interestingly enough, Mike Lee, a staff writer for the San Diego Union-Tribune, had an article that was published in April of this year, April the 2nd, 2007, and it's entitled Proposal to Reduce Funding Alarms Back County Residents. And as you read through the story, you might see a connection between San Diego and Iraq in regard to budgetary priorities. Lee of the San Diego Union-Tribune reports last April that across San Diego County's fire country, an alliance of agencies has spent about $50 million to clear dead trees and overgrown brush after blazes charred much of the region in 2003. But now the federal fire prevention money for their work is drying up. Priorities in Washington, D.C. have shifted to paying for national defense, cleanups after Hurricane Katrina, and other needs, forestry experts say. That leaves many residents uneasy about their safety and fire officials uncertain about the future of a nationally recognized program to reduce wildfire threats in San Diego County. Similar concerns nationwide are prompting a coalition of state foresters, politicians, and conservationists to ask Congress for more money to reduce fire dangers. The group said Thursday that the administration of George W. Bush has proposed cutting 14% of the budget for a critical fire prevention fund, one that has paid for work in San Diego County, when what was needed was an 85% increase. Some of the county's most dangerous forest areas have been thinned since 2004. Fire experts say the potential for trouble remains immense because about 85% of the region's forests still are littered with dead and dying trees. Many of them are on public land, including the Cleveland National Forest and Palomar Mountain State Park. To make matters worse, drought conditions that stress forests and make them susceptible to insect infestations aren't abating. In certain places, 80% of the trees are dead. Quote, "We still have a long way to go," said Tina Terrell, a former supervisor of the Cleveland National Forest, who recently became the supervisor at Sequoia National Forest. The situation worries people like Bruce Cubberly of Julian, who said his home was destroyed by the 2003 fires. Quote, "They haven't finished the job, and it's more than 3 years later," unquote, Cubberly said. In the years leading up to 2003, dead and dying trees were identified as a potential problem, but not urgent enough to spark countywide efforts to reduce so-called forest fuel. Then in October of that year, a lost hunter set a signal fire that grew into one of the largest wildfires in California history. Dead vegetation helped the inferno spread across 422 square miles, killing 15 people and destroying more than 2,200 homes. By the next year, a county document pegged the bill for forest fuel reduction at well more than $1 billion. His memories of the 2003 blazes fade, according to the San Diego Union-Tribune in August of this year. Some local leaders worry that federal officials are forgetting the lessons learned that fall. Without enough fire prevention money, they say, it is only a matter of time before the county faces another massive wildfire. Quote, "You go through an area and eliminate dead and dying trees, and 6 months later, there are more," said Chuck Maynor, Southern California Assistant Chief for the state's Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. Interesting story when we look at the headline from yesterday's New York Times, Bush's request for wars increases to 190.
Introducing the world's best air purifier. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does in cleaning and purifying the air in your home. Pet, cooking, cigarette, or even cigar smoke is no problem for this air purifier. It's so powerful, it kills molds and mildews as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. There are no moving parts to break, no plates to clean, and no filters to replace. Call 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Or visit the website now, www.aranair.us. That's www.aranair.us. Again, www.aranair.us.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Are you concerned about cholesterol, blood pressure? Are you experiencing chest pain? Are you looking for a more natural method to help improve your health issues?
I had 2 mild heart attacks, and I had an 80-90% blockage in my artery. Don recommended I take this Cardivite. I haven't had any chest pain since I've been on it. It's brought my cholesterol down. My blood sugar was really fluctuating from 10 to 14 when I went on the Cardivite. You know, it really leveled it out. I'm really pleased, and I feel so good about it. I'll tell you, it's great for your circulation, because I've noticed that I've had problems with my feet because of the diabetes, and they're getting better. They don't hurt as much. It's really great. I recommend this to anybody.
To learn more, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com. Call 1-877-928-8822.
Mark Hancock's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Dale Crowley Jr. will hook up with me in approximately 1 hour from now from Washington, D.C. Going to be talking about all kinds of things, I'm sure, related to both the Middle East as well as to contemporary American culture. As we look at this whole business of budget priorities, quite fascinating once again to go back to this April 2007 article in the San Diego Union-Tribune talking about this alliance fearing a cut in wildfire prevention. Going back 6 months ago to this California-based group, which said Thursday this is now going back to April, I believe, April the 7th, 2007, quoting from that article, they were saying back at that time that on a particular Thursday, the administration of George W. Bush has proposed cutting 14% of the budget for a critical fire prevention fund, one that has paid for work in San Diego County, when what was needed, according to this alliance, was an 85% increase. That's an article, I think, that will draw increasing scrutiny after what has happened in the last week in Southern California, especially on top of what has now been posted in the New York Times again as of October 22nd by Stephen Lee Myers. He reminds us that President Bush asked Congress this past Monday to approve $196 billion to pay for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and other national security programs, setting the stage for a new confrontation with Democrats over the administration's handling of Iraq. Mr. Bush's request increased the amount of the proposed spending by $46 billion over the $150 billion already requested this year. Much of the added spending would pay for new armored vehicles designed to withstand attacks by mines and roadside bombs, and a rise in operational costs because of the increase in the force in Iraq, now at more than 160,000 troops. The spending request declared an emergency under spending rules, even though the need for the money was never in question, comes in the middle of the White House's fight with Congress over a series of spending bills for the fiscal year that began October the 1st. None of those bills has been completed thus far. Very interesting to read through this coverage then in the New York Times about this $196 billion request by Mr. Bush to pay for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Again, that's an increase of $46 billion over the $150 billion already requested this year. When you look at these kinds of figures, it begs a number of questions. One, what is going on in the Middle East? Two, whether or not what we are doing in Iraq is sustainable. Three, how are we going to pay for a proposed expansion of this conflict into Iran, which is obviously what the neocons want at this particular stage in history? Then we get into the residual question, of course, of what's going to happen if Turkey intervenes in Iraq against the Kurds. Then, of course, this gets into the very question that Ron Paul was talking about in the Fox presidential news debates this past week, and that is the whole issue of the dollar. When you are running the kinds of budget deficits that we're running, when you are continuing to borrow billions and billions of dollars from foreign banks to finance this war for empire, and when the Federal Reserve Board is firing up the printing presses to issue new degrees of funny money, is it not inevitable that the dollar would begin a very, very historic long-term decline in value? And when you combine that kind of decline in value in the currency of your country with a reallocation of budget priorities away from some things that most people would say government should have something to do with, to priorities that government should not have anything to do with and should not be involved with at all. This is an interesting thing, combining the whole issue of the decline of the dollar historically and what this is meaning, going to mean, and what it is meaning to the national economy of the United States in conjunction with the reallocation questions that are going to emerge again in the wake of what has now happened in San Diego County. The issue was Katrina a couple of years ago and, of course, continues to be. Now we're looking at what is happening in Southern California. We're going back 6 months ago in the San Diego newspapers. There was an article at that time talking about this whole issue of the forests and the whole issue of fire dangers in Southern California, and the fact that 6 months ago the San Diego Union Tribune was reporting that George W. Bush had proposed cutting 14% of the budget for a critical fire prevention fund, when what was needed, according to this particular alliance that's quoted in the San Diego papers, was an 85% increase. Is there, in fact, a connection between that issue of Southern California and fire prevention and budget priorities and the cost of this war in the Middle East? I think that one can certainly connect those dots. Mark Glenn, I think, has done that at Crescent and Cross this morning, where he posts this San Diego Union Tribune article and asks people to read it in conjunction with what we have seen this week, both of these fires in Southern California, as well as this latest New York Times story in regard to yet another increase in the amount of spending for this war that's taking place in the Middle East. When you start talking about $196 billion, it also begs the historical question. Do we not all remember Mr. Wolfowitz, who later became the president of the World Bank, assuring the public that the entire cost of this war in Iraq, the entire cost for everything, including rebuilding that country's infrastructure, would only come to $50 billion? You know, we're spending, depending on whose figures you get into here, we are spending $8 or $9 or $10 billion a month for Iraq and Afghanistan. So when you look at this present situation that has been posted in the New York Times and see a figure this year for Iraq and Afghanistan totaling $196 billion, just this year alone, it begins to give us some conception of the cost that is being incurred in this, both past as well as present, as well as future. And again, when you start getting into these kinds of figures, it's a little bit hard to comprehend. But when you combine these kinds of expenditures with this kind of foreign borrowing, with the escalation of the national debt, and then the whole issue of the Federal Reserve printing up funny money to cover some of this, it's all going to result in currency devaluation, budgetary reallocations, and political blowback, and of a type that one can surmise is never-ending. You look at the CNN.com story today on this business in San Diego. CNN indicates that this is the largest civilian relocation since the American Civil War. This is the magnitude of the crisis that is unfolding out there. Something like 500,000 people have now been told to evacuate their homes. I have several people who are very close friends of mine who live in San Diego. We need to be praying for all of those folks this morning. But again, it begs the question, is this part of a larger picture? No one is suggesting here that Mr. Bush can be responsible for natural disaster. And yet, by the same token, when you look at this whole business of preparation, budgetary allocations, budgetary priorities, and expenditures for foreign war in conjunction with borrowing policies and Fed policies that are destroying the national currency of the United States, is not the national security state participating in a reduction, not an enhancement, in the national security priorities and the national security of this country? This is something that's going to come up again and again in coming days and weeks and months. And as near as I can tell thus far, Ron Paul is the only person running in either one of the major political parties for president who is talking about the correct priorities and who sees the bigger picture in terms of what's happening with this Iraqi war. Are we, in fact, dealing with another situation with the Roman Empire? You go back and look at the root causes of the destruction of the Roman Empire. One of them was an overexpansion of military empire and an unsustainable level of public debt, at the same time that there was a confiscatory level of taxation of the citizens that was transpiring. And then, of course, the Roman Empire over time began taking on more non-Roman citizens. As it attempted to expand its outreach, it had more non-Romans under its wing who had no ultimate allegiance to the Roman Empire. Start looking at all of those various things, and it seems to me that we're looking at a historic microcosm of what today we would refer to as the United States of America. This is where we are. This is where we're heading. Is this, in fact, another fundamental turning point in the history of the United States? I would suggest that perhaps it is. A couple of other things to take a look at this morning. One involves culture. The story is a few days old, and yet it is well worth mentioning. The British Telegraph has a headline from a few days ago entitled, "Call for Jews to Stop Calling Jesus a Bastard." Ben Martin posted this story with the UK Telegraph a few days ago. And as a matter of fact, this story is more than a few days old. It's a couple of months old as I'm beginning to look at the post here. But it's an interesting story as we examine the amount of smoke that has been coming to us from the institutional Jewish community complaining about the Roman Catholic Church's historic prayers calling for Jews to be converted to Christianity. A senior American cardinal has asked Jews to reconsider descriptions of Jesus as a bastard in exchange for a softening of traditional Catholic prayers calling for Jews to be converted to Christianity. What are the implications of this story? We'll take a look at it when we come back and maybe ask Dale Crowley about it in approximately 45 minutes.
Have you ever considered purchasing storable foods? Well, now is the time to do so and take advantage of Ready Reserve Foods pre-special, pre-oil shortage, pre-drought, pre-bank collapse, pre-housing collapse, pre-dollar collapse, pre-economic collapse, pre-martial law, pre-war, possibly nuclear, pre-bird flu special, and your order will be shipped within 7 business days, not months like some food brokers. Ready Reserve manufactures the food we sell, and we have done so continuously for over 35 years. Call 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com. We produce only the best in storable foods, all from the USA. 1-800-453-2202. Prepare yourself and family for some rough and bumpy times. 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com.
Attention RBN listeners who have trouble sleeping. If you have tried everything and still have serious problems getting a good night's sleep, then this message is going to be the single most important one you'll ever hear, and here's why. 77 RBN listeners are needed immediately to test a new, alternative method of falling asleep fast. And the best part is, this new sleep system produces dramatic results when everything else has failed, including prescription sleeping pills. You see, it works in a whole new way, utilizing special sleep frequencies to almost command your brain to fall asleep fast. And it's easy to use. Yet, because the rules governing medicine in the U.S., no health or healing claims can be made for the sleep system. However, it's still legal to own this new high-speed sleep generator, and 77 RBN listeners are invited to use this system first, before the general public. So, if you're really having trouble falling asleep, simply go to www.highspeedsleep.com. That's highspeedsleep.com, or call 877-327-0365 and tell the operator you listen to RBN. Again, that's 877-327-0365.
David J. Smith for Newswatch Magazine. Did you know that one goal of international communism was to get our young people's mind off religion by getting them onto sex? By destroying the morals of the younger generation, America would eventually become ripe for revolution without understanding why communism wanted to make young people soft and easily controlled. Have we witnessed this transformation of our young people away from God and the Bible to immorality? We'd like to help you understand how these things are coming to pass by offering you an absolutely free one-year subscription to Newswatch Magazine. Just call our toll-free number, 1-800-516-8736. That's 1-800-516-8736 to request your subscription. Call now. Operators are standing by to receive your call. Operators are standing by to receive your call. Request your subscription. Call now. Operators are standing by to receive your call.
Mark Dan Cost America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Dale Crowley Jr. will join me from Washington, D.C. in a little over a half an hour from now. Have a number of things to talk about. Dale has sent me some information about some issues that he'd like to discuss this morning. That is precisely what we will do. One of the things that may well come up in our conversation is this 23 October post in the UK Telegraph in Britain entitled Call for Jews to Stop Calling Jesus a Bastard. A senior American cardinal has asked Jews to reconsider descriptions of Jesus as a bastard in exchange for a softening of traditional Catholic prayers calling for Jews to be converted to Christianity. The controversial comments by Cardinal Francis George of the Archdiocese of Chicago concern a prayer said during Easter celebrations by the small number of parishes or priests who celebrate a particular form of Good Friday Mass. Those versions of Good Friday prayers call for the congregation to pray for Jews to be converted to Christianity. But Cardinal George said the prayer should be amended to ensure it did not offend Jews. Quote, I suspect the amendment will probably be made because the intention is to be sure that our prayers are not offensive to the Jewish people who are our ancestors in the faith, unquote, Cardinal George said in an interview with the National Catholic Reporter. Quote, we can't possibly insult them in our liturgy. Not that any group has a veto on anybody's prayers, because you can go through Jewish texts and find material that is offensive to us. But if we're interested in keeping the dialogue strong, and we have to be, we should be very cautious about any prayer that they find insulting, unquote. But this should mean, said the cardinal, that Jews in turn should consider amending their own religious texts. Quote, it does work both ways. Maybe this is an opening to say, would you care to look at some of the Talmudic literature's description of Jesus as a bastard and so on, and maybe make a few changes in some of that, unquote? That's going to be an ongoing cultural and theological dialogue, one presumes, in the days ahead. This is a post in the UK Telegraph of the 23rd of October, entitled Call for Jews to Stop Calling Jesus a Bastard. This is something, of course, that involves recent controversial comments made by Cardinal Francis George of the Archdiocese of Chicago. You know, it is interesting that in the mainstream press in recent times, there has been at least a little bit more willingness to examine questions like this. One wonders if the Mearsheimer Walt post on the Israel Lobby, which is now available at Barnes & Noble and Borders, has opened up the possibility for the discussion of other issues like this from time to time in the mainstream media, including this one. We'll have to watch it and to see to what extent this could be a part of a trend in the days ahead. You know, I'm still recovering from the No More Wars conference in Southern California in Los Angeles, October the 12th through the 14th. I have not made many public statements, if any, about that conference, what I observed there. What I perceived to be going on there. It is a matter of record, by the way, that I did not speak at that conference. I had spent a tremendous amount of time preparing an address to be delivered out there in Southern California in that time frame. A series of very, very improbable events, including the attempt of the Marriott Irvine people to shut the conference down, had something to do with why I didn't speak, because the whole speaking schedule and the entire series of events that weekend were so altered in regard to what took place that it was difficult to find out exactly where I was going to fit in the schedule of events, either Saturday or Sunday. And then by the time that Sunday came around, there were a series of things that transpired on Sunday that made it apparent to me that wisdom might be the better part of valor in whether or not I spoke to the gathering that assembled in a place called the Atomic Ballroom in Irvine on Sunday. I elected not to speak on Sunday. I won't say anything more about that now, but that was what I felt led to do. There were several close friends of mine at the conference who, examining all of the things that were going on in terms of the Sunday gathering, advised me not to address this group, and that is exactly the decision that I made. That's all that I'll say about that at this point. But let me offer one point of encouragement to all of those of you who follow that No More Wars for Israel conference and continue to believe that this is the central issue of our time, whether or not the United States should go to war and, in effect, start a third world war on behalf of Zionist interests in the Middle East. I have done a lot of thinking in the last few days about this whole subject and have been writing some things down that are not going to be made public at this particular time in regard to some ideas as to where the anti-Zionist, no more wars for empire crowd goes from here. I think the ideas are pretty good ones. Not all of them are original ideas. Some of them are based on some previous concepts that have been.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
The Berkeleyite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeleyite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeleyite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeleyite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce up to 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year. It is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner on RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web, 24 hours a day, at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network. This catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Mark Danfoss, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Dale Crowley Jr. will join me this morning in approximately a half an hour from Washington, D.C., talk about items of interest to Dale. He is quite a guy. Many of you have known of Dale Crowley for many, many years, and his Focus on Israel show at WFAX AM up in Washington. Dale Crowley, I think, is one of the real giants in regard to true, legitimate soundly based anti-Zionist activism and activity. And particularly valuable is Dale Crowley, invaluable, I should say, because of the fact that he is a Protestant evangelical. He has been virtually a lone voice in the wilderness for a very long period of time, warning about the dangers of dispensationalism and the way in which the particular brand of dispensationalism that has been used to support Zionism worldwide was, in effect, a contradiction of the basic New Testament witness to the gospel and a basic contradiction in terms of New Testament principles and ethics. Dale Crowley Jr. is looking more and more like a modern-day prophet as we see these things continuing to unfold in the Middle East. I really missed seeing Dale out there in Southern California October the 12th through the 14th. I am hopeful that maybe one of these times my travels will take me to Washington, D.C. once more to spend a little time with Dale and with his wife, because they are two of the real quality people you'll ever want to meet based upon all who have spent time with them over the years. And certainly when you look at the entire historical record in regard to the career of Dale Crowley Jr., again, he is one of the true elder statesmen in the freedom movement, a true Christian gentleman, and one whose anti-Zionist activity has always been very soundly, biblically, and constitutionally based for a very long period of time. We're talking about a guy here, of course, who has been involved in this type of work, not for days or weeks or months or even for a sheer handful of years as I have been, but a guy who's been on the front line of this particular issue for decades, which is why he is venerated to the extent that he is. We'll look forward to talking with him, of course, in approximately a half an hour from now. A couple of additional items that I want to draw your attention to that I was looking at yesterday in the Financial Times, which obviously is a Rothschild-backed publication, but I do take a look at it because there's much in it that is quite revelatory in regard to what is happening in the world, despite the attempts of secular media to cover it up. If you look at the Tuesday, October the 23rd edition of the Financial Times on page 4, there's quite a segment entitled World News. World News. We'll get back to this Iran story perhaps before Pastor Crowley comes on this AM. Wanted to make reference to something that we might take a look at briefly tomorrow before Mary Starrett comes on, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party. And this is something that Andrew Marshall has posted at globalresearch.ca. He now has a three-part series entitled The Imperial Playground, History of Iran and Recent History. Some of what he talks about in those three articles, especially the most recent one, Part 3, I'd like to maybe take a look at on the air. And we probably won't do too much of that this morning because Dale Crowley is going to be with us in approximately 23 minutes from now. But Marshall's post at Chasadovsky's globalresearch.ca is particularly instructive when you hold it up alongside of yesterday's Financial Times, page 4. Here are a couple of the really big headlines from page 4 of yesterday's Financial Times. One says, Iran, financial action sought. U.S. sees more banks leaving Tehran. The United States has praised a move, according to the Financial Times, by international regulators to censure Iran for inadequate money laundering and terrorist financing controls, a step Washington says means that more foreign banks will pull out from or scale down business with Tehran. The statement this month by the Financial Action Task Force, a 34-country anti-money laundering group, said that Iran's deficiencies in the two areas represented a, quote, significant vulnerability within the international financial system, unquote. It called for action, quote, on an urgent basis, unquote, by Iran, and, quote, enhanced due diligence, unquote, from financial institutions. Stuart Levy, the U.S. Undersecretary of the Treasury, told the Financial Times that the statement would, quote, have the effect of accelerating the process, unquote, of international banks' retreat from Iran. He said the statement would lead to, quote, further drawing back by financial institutions and further cutoffs of business altogether, unquote. This is the only thing that has the potential to avoid military confrontation with Iran, said Matthew Levitt, a a former Treasury official, now at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, referring to the U.S. drive to target Iran with a mixture of United Nations sanctions and financial isolation as the dispute over Tehran's nuclear program continues. That's an interesting story. U.S. sees more banks leaving Tehran. It's as interesting for what it doesn't tell you as for what it does. You know, if we go back to Jim Loeb's story, which I read in the air a couple of days ago, what is WINEP? W-I-N-E-P. The Financial Times yesterday makes reference to it. Quotes Matthew Levitt, a former Treasury official now at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, is saying that this whole business of financial institution drawbacks and cutoffs is the only thing that has the potential to avoid military confrontation with Iran. I would say two things to Mr. Levitt. The first is that the people involved in this are not trying to stop a military confrontation with Iran. They're trying to provoke one. And the whole business of cutting off banking business with Iran and foreign business with Iran generally is part and parcel of the larger conflict that the neoconservative Jewish establishment is trying to engage in with that country. And what the London Financial Times doesn't tell you is that Mr. Levitt's organization, the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, is a virtual enforcement arm and extension of the Israeli government. Jim Loeb got into this in his post, his most recent one entitled, Cheney Raises the Rhetoric Against Iran. If you go to antiwar.com, you'll still see that essay. I'll read again a small portion of Jim Loeb's essay to put into context what was said by the London Financial Times yesterday. According to Jim Loeb, the forum chosen by Dick Cheney to deliver his most recent speech, which involved raising the rhetoric against Iran, was in many ways as significant as its timing and context. WINEP, W-I-N-E-P, WINEP, the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, a generally hawkish think tank, was founded some 20 years ago, says Jim Loeb, by the research director of the highly influential lobby, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, and is funded by many of the same donors. AIPAC, in turn, has led a high-powered effort to persuade Congress, according to Loeb, to impose new tough sanctions against Iran and foreign companies that do business with it, and more recently to have Tehran's Revolutionary Guard declared a terrorist, quote-unquote, organization. As Cheney himself noted Sunday, according to Jim Loeb, his own national security advisor, John Hanna, once served as WINEP's deputy director. While WINEP does not take specific positions on pending legislation or policies, it is generally regarded as at least sympathetic to AIPAC's efforts and often provides the research AIPAC uses in its lobbying activities. Why did the London Financial Times not give us that context? This is where, of course, antiwar.com becomes absolutely pivotal in its influence, because in reading what is posted there by Jim Loeb, we understand exactly what WINEP is. It's an extension of Jewish power worldwide. It's an extension of the influence of the Israeli government in terms of the domestic and foreign policy of the United States government. That is what this Washington Institute for Near East Policy is. And yet the London Financial Times does not contextualize the significance of the fact that it is quoting yesterday from Matthew Levitt, a former Treasury official who is now connected with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Israel is behind it all, folks. And when you look at what has been said by the London Financial Times yesterday, its international staff posted this story. This is Daniel Dombey and Stephanie Kirk-Gossner in Washington. Peter Thal Larson and Michael Peel in London, Bernard Simon in Toronto, Hugh Williamson in Berlin, Adam Jones in Paris, and Najme Bezorgmer in Tehran. Yet at no time do any of these people on the international staff of the London Financial Times tell us the truth about what WinEP is. I'll tell you what the London Financial Times is. It's an extension in turn of the House of Rothschild. Another article, another headline, which appears on that same page, page 4 of the London Financial Times of October 23rd, Tuesday, is this one. Washington discovers fresh ways of turning the screw. Measures abound over how to increase pressure on Iran, write Daniel Dombey and Stephanie Kirkgossner. This is a continuation, one presumes, of the first article on page 4 of yesterday's London Financial Times. Just under 2 years ago, Mr. Dombey and Ms. Kirkgossner say, George W. Bush appeared to confess himself at a loss when it came to how to exert U.S. pressure on Tehran. Quote, "We don't have much leverage with the Iranians right now," unquote, he said in December of 2005. "We are relying on others because we have sanctioned ourselves out of influence with Iran," unquote. Today, by contrast, says the London Financial Times, the U.S. is fizzing with ideas about how to push Iran in the dispute over its nuclear program, whether the sanctions involved are unilateral or multilateral, informal or formal. Various arms of the Bush administration, Congress, and even individual states, including Texas folks, are all seeking to increase the pressure on Tehran. Condoleezza Rice, Secretary of State, has signaled that the U.S. may put the Quds force of Iran's Revolutionary Guard on the U.S. terrorist list. The article, of course, then continues to go on and on, including the combination of executive orders issued by Mr. Bush that prohibit third parties from doing business in the U.S. on behalf of the Iranian banks Sadarat and SEPA, together with a U.N. resolution prescribing SEPA, has helped to deter many international financial institutions from transactions with Iran. While you continue reading through that story, it becomes abundantly clear this is a continuation of the conflict by other means. Quite clearly, the United States is not, in my judgment, undertaking this kind of international financial manipulation with the idea in mind that we would avoid military confrontation with Iran, which is the propaganda coming forth from the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and Mr. Matthew Levitt. This is a part of a series of conflictual actions that are pointing toward the eventual implementation of a military policy and a military attack against Iran. A couple of questions again are begged by this whole situation. If the United States is having as much trouble as it's having in Iraq, whether we should be there or not, and to me all of the constitutional and moral evidence says that we should not be there, but even if one believes that we should be, how do you in fact engage in a war as disastrous as the one we're currently fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan and believe that we are in a good position to expand that conflict to Iran? We've talked about this before on this show. Iran has three times the geographic expansion of Iraq. Iran is many times over the population of Iraq, approximately three times as much. That was the figure I was trying to cite. I apologize for that. We're talking about three times the population here. We're talking about a conventional military that is many times more powerful than that supported by Iraq as of March of 2003. And, of course, as we look at the whole business of Mr. Ahmadinejad, it is apparent that unlike Saddam Hussein, Mr. Ahmadinejad, like him or dislike him, is a lot more effective in lining up foreign support for his own position vis-a-vis a proposed American-Israeli intervention in his country. When one examines the recent statements of Mr. Putin, the recent statements of the Chinese, Mr. Ahmadinejad's negotiations with both, and some of the ongoing conversations that Tehran has been engaged in with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO, it becomes abundantly clear that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, like him or not, is really putting his ducks in a row in regard to getting a much broader-based anti-American global coalition put together that opposes what the United States is talking about doing or intimating that it will do when it comes to Tehran in the next 12 months. And again, when you look at the United States military position in Iraq and Afghanistan, do we really want to take on a country of 70 million people where over half of the population is under the age of 30 and which has a Revolutionary Guard force and a Quds force and has a conventional military, including a conventional air force that is many, many times as powerful as that that Saddam Hussein sported in March of 2003. Do we really know what we're getting into here? And that does not even begin to address the question, once again, of how much money we are borrowing in the foreign banking system to finance this war for empire. And when you look at a $9 trillion national debt, when you look at Mr. Bush's most recent budgetary request as of this week of $196 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan alone, and when you start talking about the Federal Reserve Board firing up the printing press to inflate the American currency to provide more unbacked cash to engage in this endeavor in the Middle East, it certainly does not look very good. We're looking at a historic downturn in the value of the American dollar. We are looking at record levels of American debt at the same time that we're talking about a disastrous foreign trade deficit. How does a country that is this overextended in regard to foreign loans, this overextended in regard to national debt, this overextended militarily, and this overextended in regard to what is clearly a foreign trade policy that is destroying the
Pinch me, Bill. I can't believe it. A few months ago, I couldn't even afford gas for my car. And here we are with season tickets on the 50-yard line.
I know what you mean, John. I remember the day you saw my new car and asked me if I robbed Bill Gates. Our lives sure have changed since we discovered DidYouRobBillGates.com.
I was struggling to make ends meet. Now I've got a new car and a college fund for Lisa when she graduates from high school next year. And I owe it all to you. Because you told me about DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Hey, John, we all win when the money problems disappear. I want to tell everybody, because the more people we have on the success team, the better it works. It's hard for the little guy these days. We pool our resources to level the playing field.
So the more people that go to www.DidYouRobBillGates.com, the more cash for everybody. What a concept!
Introducing the world's best air purifier. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does in cleaning and purifying the air in your home. Pet, cooking, cigarette, or even cigar smoke is no problem for this air purifier. It's so powerful, it kills molds and mildews as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. There are no moving parts to break, no plates to clean, and no filters to replace. Call 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Or visit the website now, www.aranair.us. That's www.aranair.us. Again, www.aranair.us.
Listening to RBN has helped you to prepare for an emergency and invest in the gold and silver markets, but now you'd like help managing your other investments. Would you prefer personalized investment advice? Onesti Investment Advisors can help. Onesti Investment Advisors will customize a portfolio with no conflicts of interest. Onesti Investment Advisors is a fee-based firm. We do no underwriting and receive no commission, so we always look after your interest. The better you do, the better we do. Get diversification by investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, and more. Onesti Investment Advisors can help fund education, plan for retirement, lower your taxes, increase retirement income, and protect against a falling dollar. You've worked hard for your assets. Former floor trader and certified financial planner certificate, John Onesti, has the experience to help grow your investments. If you're looking to improve your investment results, call or email for a free consultation. Onesti Investment Advisors, 505-296-2453. That's 505-296-2453. Click on our banner ad on RBN or visit our website at onestiadvisors.com. Onesti Investment Advisors, looking after your investments. grow your investments. If you're looking to improve your investment results, call or email for a free consultation. Onesti Investment Advisors, 505-296-2453. That's 505-296-2453. Click on our banner ad on RBN or visit our website at onestiadvisors.com. Onesti Investment Advisors, looking after your investments. Onesti has the experience to help grow your investments. If you're looking to improve your investment results, call or email for a free consultation. Onesti Investment Advisors, 505-296-2453. That's 505-296-2453. Click on our banner ad on RBN or visit our website at onestiadvisors.com. Onesti Investment Advisors, looking after your investments.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Dale Crowley Jr. will join me in just a few minutes from Washington, D.C. to talk about some of the most important issues of the day. One additional thing, which probably has gotten some play on some other RBN shows, but I wanted to make reference to it here, is the latest on the United Nations and the death penalty. If you look at page 4 of the London Financial Times from yesterday, on the same page where they're talking about the U.S. policy vis-a-vis Iran, at the bottom of that page there is something entitled, The United Nations to Vote on Abolishing the Death Penalty. This comes to us from Harvey Morris of the London Financial Times at the U.N. Suffice it to say that although the United States is expected to oppose that resolution, Mr. Bush has already opened the door for the international interference with both American law and Texas law in regard to this whole issue of crime and capital punishment. Howard Phillips, the founder of the Constitution Party, makes reference to this in the most recent edition of the Howard Phillips Issues and Strategy Bulletin. Here's what he has to say. Howard says that Mr. Bush prefers UN law to Texas law. And Howard Phillips quotes from the Associated Press, as that in turn is reproduced in the Washington Times of October the 8th on page A4. Looking at that piece, Howard Phillips notes that Texas wants President Bush to get out of the way of the state's plan to execute a Mexican for the killing of two teenage girls. Mr. Bush, who presided over 152 executions as governor of Texas, wants to halt the execution of Jose Ernesto Medellin, what has become a confusing test of presidential power that the Supreme Court ultimately will sort out. The president wants to enforce a decision by the International Court of Justice that found the convictions of Medellin and 50 other Mexican-born prisoners violated their rights to legal help as outlined in the 1963 Vienna Convention. The president does not agree with the ICJ's interpretation of the Vienna Convention, the administration said, in arguments filed with the court. This time, though, the U.S. agreed to abide by the international court's decision because ignoring it would harm American interests abroad, the government said. Texas argues strenuously that neither the international court nor Mr. Bush has any say in Medellin's case. Ted Cruz, the Texas Solicitor General, said, the administration's position would, quote, allow the president to set aside any state law the president believes is inconvenient to international comity, unquote. Medellin was born in Mexico but spent most of his childhood in the United States. He was 18 years of age in June of 1993 when he and other members of the Black and Whites gang in Houston encountered teens Jennifer Erdman and Elizabeth Pena on a railroad trestle as the girls were taking a shortcut. With